Hey, how you doing? Welcome to Garden Fork Radio. This is a little different for the Eric Usual podcast. This is Aaron and I. We did a YouTube live stream last week, and I wanted to share with you that live stream, or at least the audio portion of the live stream. So are you working out? Are you in the car? Are you sitting back in your chair? Anyway, spend some time with me and Aaron answering questions. I think you'll like it. Ready? Here we go. Hey, everybody. Welcome to Garden Fork. Since we were here yesterday, this is our official first live. Aaron and I, we're trying out a new piece of software called StreamYard, which is, the logo's right up in there. But if you have a YouTube channel or you want to do something where you want more than one person and you don't want to use Zoom, this worked really well for us yesterday. So hi, Aaron.
Hey, how are you?
Where, Roxanne from Ontario is here. So we thought today we would answer people's questions. I think Will from the Weekend Homestead is here, and I invited him to join, and he was going to throw us questions that come up in the stream, because I kind of wanted to avoid having to look down, you know, see, you see people's eyes always look down to the chat rather than talking to you. The house was freezing about 5 minutes ago, so I turned up the heat, and I'm got thermal everything on, so I might have to undress in front of you here. It's suddenly really warm. Hey, and Scott, the agronomist, is here.
Oh, good.
He's amazing. He's like growing hundreds of acres of fields of stuff.
Yeah. He is a font of information, that is for sure.
And Conrad's here. Conrad, I see you everywhere. So questions, guys. So I guess we could start with, the chat. Oh, and Rick is here. Rick doesn't know this yet, but he's going to be in the podcast soon. I never know when to call him. I don't know if he's asleep, you know.
It's funny.
All right. So Aaron, you just got some snow up there, I saw on Instagram.
Yeah, it's actually, I was just outside running around with the camera because it's beautiful. I'm not a winter person, but it is, we probably have on the ground totally maybe like 8 to 10 inches. It's all cleaned up now. It's not cold out. There is no wind. It's like the most still day, other than I don't know what hunting season it is here, but someone nearby is trying to shoot something and they keep missing. But because there's just like a gunshot, which is totally not unusual around here hunting wise, but it's the most beautiful day here. It's absolutely like, if I have to have a winter day, this is it right now. It's just stellar today.
Yeah, we had an ice storm yesterday, and then the sun came out and melted all then the ice started dropping off the trees.
Oh yeah. Oh, great. Watch your head.
And then our friends from Brooklyn stopped by to visit. So when we don't go inside, you know, because of the pandemic, we're outside and we're like, oh.
Yeah, where your heart hats, right? Yeah, you know, actually, I was actually really happy to see the snow too, because, you know, it's good to have some snow on the garden. That helps. It's like the best insulation there is anywhere is a layer of snow. So while I don't necessarily like winter or really love snow most of the time, it's really good for the garden. So it was good to see that.
Yeah, we had snow and then it melted. So, I mean, since I've been here the last 20 years, I've just seen this warming trend in the winters. And I mean, we need the snow cover. I think we do for a lot of the plants here, but I have just talked to my maple syrup expert who, I learned from, Bill, who I made a video about quite a while ago. He thinks we're going to be okay, because once we get hard frost in the ground, once you get the hard frost and then you get the warming, that's really what starts the pumping of sugar.
Oh, okay. So. Cool. That's awesome.
I'm just going to send Will a quick text here while we're chatting, okay?
Okay. Can you chat and text at the same time?
Maybe I could just talk to Will through the screen. Will, I thought you were going to be a guest, but you could throw us the questions. Or can you just throw us the question? I don't know. Could you text me the questions? Anyway, I didn't want to be rude and keep on looking down at the, hi, Karen. See, I like doing that. But if you guys have some good questions.
So I have a question for you. Do you make New Year's resolutions?
No.
Neither do I.
I don't talk about things till they happen, but I did a kind of a New Year's thing that I started in the fall, and then I dropped it. And then I just started it December 30th. I thought, let me get on board with this before everybody else does. So I'll talk about that in about a month, and we'll see where we are at that. But I've gotten much better at just trying to simplify and get some goals. And I hate people that plan. I don't hate them. But this is the closest thing I have to a plan. It's a reporter's notebook. And this is my archive. I can just look at the past pieces of paper that I wrote down, you know. And then I lost this like 3 weeks ago, and it ends up in my mailbox in the country, and my neighbor found it on the road because I was driving my quad.
Oh, that's why it's all crunchy.
It fell out of my quad, and then my neighbor got it.
That's funny.
So I try and have goals throughout the year, and my biggest goal is to get rid of material junk, which I'm actually making a video about right now in a way. I just got rid of some rain gutters. I needed to make some room in the garage attic to put these Adirondack chairs that I never know where to store. And I literally took they're nice. They're just, we got the new gutters with the leaf free gutter thing.
Yeah.
$600. It's a miracle. I don't have to go on a ladder anymore. Yeah. I mean, I figured the emergency room visit would cost more than $600.
Yep.
When I fall off the ladder. So I put them at the end of the drive with my little free sign, and I put it up on our little town Facebook group. And 2 days later, they're gone.
Yeah, that's the ticket.
So I'm all about just kind of simplifying.
I saw an article at one point about thinking about like the stuff that you hang on to because you might have a use for it someday. Thinking about that, like if you had to pay rent for that thing to have a spot in your house while you stored it, would that rent end up being more than just having to go buy it new when you actually need it, rather than hanging on to whatever that thing is for 10 years and never using it and pushing around and having that thing clutter up your life? I thought that was an interesting way to look at it.
Completely. And then like the other day, I knew I needed what are those slider locks for like old wooden doors? It's a bolt, like a little manual deadbolt, right?
Yeah.
And I knew I had some somewhere. I couldn't find them. So I had to go buy them.
Mm-hmm. Right. And then you probably found them right after that because that's how that works.
Yeah.
So Roxanne says she resolved not to make New Year's resolutions, which I think at some point in my head, I don't know that I ever formalized it in any way, but I just realized for me, making a New Year's resolution was just one more way to be disappointed in myself because it never worked. So I'm like, So Iron Worker Doug says he quit smoking. So 1 year he's quit smoking for a year, it looks like. Way to go.
That's fantastic.
That's awesome. That's a tough one.
My father tried to quit, I think, quite a few times. But what finally did it was he was driving down the interstate and he felt some pain in his arm. So he drove to his hospital and he walked in the front door and he says, "Can you call my doctor? I'm having a little chest pain." And they laid him on the ground of the lobby and they paddled him. And he said, "If I get through this, I'll quit smoking."
Yeah, well, that's one of those deals you make, right?
He had the burn marks on his chest, you know, and so.
Yeah, that's crazy. So RS wanted us to talk about the top bee plants.
Well, that's your department, Aaron.
Well, I would say, listen, anytime you're looking for plants for pollinators of any variety, look for simple flowers. So, you know, no doubles, nothing too fluffy. Let's see, Monarda. There's a reason Monarda is called bee bomb. Let's see what else. I'm just trying to, you know, in winter my brain gets a little fuzzy. Nepeta will be covered in bees all the time. And Nepeta is great because that's also a lot of bee plants happen to also be deer resistant plants. So that's, I think, just another bonus. What else is there? I'm trying to think of things off the top of my head. You know, anything where the pollen source is really easy for them to get at, you know, like tubular flowers that are quite long, bees can't access that pollen. So those don't really do much for most bees. That's more of like a hummingbird kind of thing. Or sometimes there's a moth, types of moths that do that. So simple flowers, you know, some of the umbellifers. So those are the flowers like I've got Angelica, I've got, Aralia. I have an Aralia that flowers. Those are covered in every kind of bee and wasp and pollinator that you can possibly imagine. Those are covered. It's unbelievable how many of those, are around there. So, hey, somebody said, oh, hey, Yulia's here. So Yulia, I don't know if you know Yulia, Eric, but Yulia is this fabulous gardener in New Jersey. She's a garden designer. She said she hears that linden trees are amazing for bees. So there you go.
Oh, they are. They're big and they're big urban trees too, actually, linden.
Yes. Yes, they are good. Small garden musings. Thanks, guys. She brought up mountain mint pygnanthemum, which is like one of my favorite new things that I've added to my garden. I mean, it's not new for anyone but me, probably. But mountain mint is, I grow Pygnanthemum muticum, but the thinner one, that's the blunt mountain mint. There's another one too. Those are like pollinator paradises right there. Borage. Valerie says borage. That's great. Calamintha. See, thank you guys for reminding me what plants are. My brain has taken a mental break from plants and it's rusty in there. So Calamintha, that is a fabulous plant all around. Just a good plant for bees, good plant for gardeners, for sure. Lots of good suggestions there.
You know, also sunflowers. I mean, they're a later bloomer, but
as long as you are growing the ones that have pollen, because a lot of sunflowers these days are pollenless.
Oh.
Yeah, a lot of the ones that are growing, especially for like the cut flower trade, don't have pollen in them anymore. Not anymore, but they've bred the pollen out of them. So you don't want those for if you're worried about pollinators, that is.
I'm trying to throw some information about Aaron down below here because I know we're just learning the software. I put, if you guys want to sign up for my email list, there's a link in the text just below the video. And also Aaron's YouTube channel is down there as well. But also just type in The Impatient Gardener in a search engine and you will find everything about her. You've got a huge following on Instagram with all these amazing pictures.
I like Instagram. That is, to me, there's the my brain responds well to flipping through and seeing pretty pictures of everything. It's probably not good for me.
Question, Aaron, for Aaron, you had licorice last year. Did you start from scratch?
Wonderly, you got to tell me what licorice you would be talking about. Because I'm not sure what that would be.
Did you plant licorice last year, Aaron?
I did not. I mean, unless are you talking about Helichrysum? So it might be Helichrysum that you're talking about. I had a lot of those Helichrysum vines. No, I did not grow those. But mine also don't flower, so it would not be a benefit to pollinators. Those ones that I grew, anyways. Oh yeah, fennel, small garden fennel. Fennel's good. Yeah, that falls into that umbellifer category. Anything with those sort of flat, open flowers that are made up of tiny little flowers, they love those. Yeah, no, that Helichrysum. Sorry about that. Again, rusty. That Helichrysum, I bought those plants last year. So, and that was a cultivated variety from, I think, Proven Winners.
From one of my Garden Fork patrons. I have the Patreon app on my phone, and I get messages from my Garden Fork patrons, Aaron being one of them. Aaron actually has my cell phone number, so that's even closer to me. But Kent, who is a great guy, he asks, rebuilding our raised beds, we stocked lots of oak leaves. Can we incorporate directly or do we compost them first?
Well, what's your advice for that, Eric?
I would chop them up because I think they're like leather.
Yeah. And I would not put them, mix them in with the soil that they're going to be adding to your raised beds. I'd either put them in the bottom of a raised bed. If you haven't filled it up with the soil yet, I'd put them in the bottom as like filler, or I'd put them on the top as a top dressing, but I wouldn't probably work those into the soil. I'd just let them sort of break down naturally, either on the top or the bottom.
Yeah, because oak leaves are so thick. Like I have sugar maples. I have sugar maples, beech, mm-hmm. and oak here. And the sugar maple and the beech, you know, I run through the mower, the chipper shredder, and like my garlic will blow through it really easily. Any perennial push right through it nicely. But the oak leaves are just so darn thick that it just doesn't work. Yeah. So Kent, dig out your beds and put the oak leaves in the bottom.
There you go. Hey, Roxanne says, I'm sure you bought all your sunflower seeds. Don't worry about it. You know, I would say this. I am probably going to grow sunflowers this year, I think, for the first time. I have never grown a sunflower, if you can believe that. And I am probably going to buy some of the pollenless varieties just because they're a little showier. But my thought on that is I provide a pretty good, this garden provides a pretty good habitat for pollinators and everything else. And I feel like I don't really allow myself to feel a lot of guilt if every once in a while I want to plant something that isn't necessarily the perfect plant for pollinators, because I feel like I make up for it in a lot of other ways. So don't feel bad about that, Roxanne, at all.
Hey, Wanda's here as well. She's another one of the Garden Fork patrons. James Hampton says, don't think you saw my comment last night. No, because I fell asleep. But about my brick oven. So he made a brick oven because of our channel. He used angle iron and old bricks they dug up from the garden. It works amazing. Pizza is delicious. You know, I would like to make pizza ovens for every YouTube video, but I thought I better move away from that. So I'm playing with rocket stoves. The last of the rocket stove series is going to post today, but I'm struggling with the thumbnail. And unfortunately on YouTube, the thumbnail has become pretty important. And I've been texting Aaron pictures of thumbnails going, which one, A or B, A or B. And there's this really cool minimalist one I have of just the waffle iron. Oh, maybe I could load it up here. And then there's the typical Eric one holding the waffle and the waffle iron and the rocket stove. And I thought the minimalist one would work really well, but the expert who has a lot more views than I do.
Don't say that. But Eric, you know, this is really interesting. I once heard some really smart person say that done was better than perfect. You've been messing around with that thumbnail for like 3 days. Just do it. Get the video up. 3 weeks. Get the video up.
It's a really fun video. The camera operator was there the whole time. So let me see if I'll find the picture. Aaron, you talk while I find the picture.
Okay, I'll talk. I'm going to go through some of these questions now. So Allison asked if we battle clover mites. And I got to be honest with you, Allison, I had to start Googling that because I'm not even sure I knew what a clover mite was. It's interesting. And you say you're in Chicago then. That's interesting. I don't know. I mean, maybe I've seen these things before, but I don't know that I've ever had enough problem with them to even know what they were or start thinking about how to deal with them. So I guess I'm not going to be a great source of information on that. And then James asked if we've done any worm farming. No, I have not ever gotten into that. But, you know, my compost certainly is a source of worms. For sure. I'm always a little, oh gosh, I don't even know if I want to bring it up because it's the most controversial thing I talk about. I'm a little sketchy on worms these days because we've got this terrible invasive worm here that's causing a lot of problems. So while I used to pull a worm out of my garden and get really excited about it and think, look at me, I've made this wonderful habitat. Now we have these worms that are not necessarily they're not good to find. So now I'm all skeptical about worms and whatever. That's aside. I'm not even going down that road because I've gotten more hate mail about worms than any other thing I've ever talked about. Worms were the most controversial thing I've ever talked about on my blog. It's remarkable, really.
Are you ready? Are you ready for the?
Yeah, let's see them.
I'm going to hit share screen and see what happens.
Okay.
Okay. This is easiest with two monitors. Well, sorry. Okay. Select a street.
While you're figuring that out, Eric, James okay. just said, oh, here you go.
Is that there. Showing?
Yeah, that's cool. That worked out great.
So that is the minimalist thumbnail that I thought would work really well. The camera operator takes these amazing pictures. And so shall I show you the other one?
Yeah, and then everyone can vote.
Okay, so then I'm going to try the other one. Oh, that is it showing?
Yeah, it's showing.
So then this is the one of a typical Garden Fork one where it's me and showing the thing. But the problem with this one to me is that it doesn't create any excitement. It doesn't create any anticipation because it shows I made a waffle. And part of Garden Fork is let's try this and see what happens, because sometimes it doesn't work. And I'm trying to create a story arc, you know, what I mean, like in romance comedies, you know, the boy meets the girl, the boy does something stupid and then reunites with the girl and it's happy ever after. But Garden Fork doesn't always happen that way. So it's kind of, can I make a rocket stove and cook a waffle? But the thumbnail, I'm showing you that I made a waffle. Or is that too deep of a question?
Everyone's voting for the first one so far.
Oh, for the minimalist one?
Mm-hmm. Yep. That's what everyone's saying so far.
Rick, what do you mean the lighting is strange?
I think he meant on the second thumbnail, be my guess.
Oh, we'll talk about that, Rick.
Yeah.
All right. How can you have a worm problem in a compost bin?
Right, I think that's Lena. And I suspect, Lena, what you were saying is that you've got worms, invasive worms in your compost. I mean, worms in compost is generally thought to be a good thing, but invasive worms in compost is not. And the thing to do if you have that is to work on getting your compost hotter, because most of those invasive, well, most worms, frankly, can't tolerate over a certain amount of temperature. They will not be able to tolerate, and their eggs will not be able to tolerate that. So work on getting, if you have invasive worms, a species of worms that you don't want in your compost, and you're sure that's it, work on getting your compost hotter, and that should help with the problem at least.
When I ran the composting operation for the Park Slope Food Co-op, which was 6 1-cubic-yard compost bins, that's a lot if you imagine mm-hmm. 1-cubic-yard. We had red wigglers in the compost, and when the compost was heating up, those red wigglers would go to the corners.
Yep, they go to those cool spots, yep.
Or the top. You could literally just, you could just lift off a little bit of the top and they're right there. Mm-hmm. And you could scoop them out. Mm-hmm. There's a question, Aaron. What would happen if I bought a 20-pound bag of sunflower seeds and spread them over a field? Would I get sunflowers to grow? So you got a Tractor Supply bag of sunflower seed, bird seed, you know.
Yeah, I think they would to a certain extent, but I think, you know, a lot of times those seeds are not kept at like any sort of, in any way you'd want to store a seed. So I wonder what your germination would be like on those. I don't really know the answer to it. My answer is probably, but there's probably a better way to do that.
Yeah, you can buy flowering sunflower seed from Fedco Seeds in bulk.
Yeah.
And they also have hybrids, but they also have open pollinated ones. And if they're open pollinated, you can let them grow up. The bees will come and pollinate them, bumblebees and honeybees and other bees. And then the birds will eat some of the seeds. Some of the seeds are going to drop and they'll grow again. The harder part of that equation, that challenge to me, is fighting back grasses and invasives that will choke out a lot of the sunflowers before they grow. I mean, you can rototill a piece of land, and if you don't keep up on the weeds, they're just going to take over the rototilled piece of land.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know, but I remember being actually in the Balkans. I was in what was then Yugoslavia. It's now Croatia and Serbia. And we would, we take the train everywhere. And there were just fields and fields of sunflowers for their oil. You know, they had for cooking oil. But man, it's beautiful. I just love them.
Well, you know, these days, a lot of the flower farmers who grow sunflowers, apparently for flower farmers, sunflowers are like one of the number one crops because it's one of their, the crops you can charge a lot for a sunflower and they're very, very cheap to grow. Biggest issue with them apparently is that they really, I'm sure maybe our agronomist can talk about that, but they really suck a lot of nitrogen out of the soil. So they do you do have to kind of make it a point to rejuvenate your soil. But the biggest issue they have is that people without permission go into their fields to go take like graduation pictures or like engagement pictures or something. And they stomp all over all the flowers. And apparently it's a huge problem with people just going into a sunflower seed on the side of the road thinking it just happened. Like somebody didn't just put it there on purpose. So
in our town, we have a lot of lilacs that I don't know if they have naturalized, I guess is the word here. Just seems like the soil is kind of perfect for lilacs. And I was driving past my friend's property and someone had pulled their car over and there was a person yanking the lilac flowers off the bush. And I just slowed down and I found yelling really doesn't work. So I just said, "Are those yours?" And then I just kept eye contact with them. And they're like, "Well, no." I'm like, "No, they're my friends." And I just drove off. So, by the way, Rich G is here, everyone. Rich G is my one of my inspirational gurus. He is a business executive coach. So if you're thinking about transitioning to a new job, he has a class on that, an online class. So Rich, R-I-C-H, and then G-E-E, richg.com. We go to the diner sometimes in Connecticut, once a year maybe. But anyway, hello, Rich. Thank you for being here. He's an inspiring guy to me.
So. Rich is looking for suggestion of perennial plants and bushes for the front yard to hide the foundation. Excuse me.
All right. Do not plant things near your house, at least in New England, because unless you have like a plastic house, I have a wood clapboard house, and any plant that you put near the house is going to hold moisture against your house, and you're going to get at the very least moss and mold against your house. So I don't mean to pour cold water on your idea, Rich, but maybe you could put plants, but not as close to the house, but still visually from the road, it could hide the foundation. Or you could paint the foundation camouflage, maybe.
Don't do that. don't do that, Rich. We can do better than painting the foundation camouflage. There's all kinds of stuff. You know, I think what you want to look for, though, is, providing a little bit of, buffer between the foundation and your house, I think is a good thing. But look for things. What you want to look for is height, probably before anything else, other than once you figure out zone and exposure, that stuff. Because one of the things that I see a lot is that people want that height quickly, and then it's great for like 3 years, and then all of a sudden they live the rest of their life with a giant freaking yew shrub in front of their windows or something. So I would say that's the thing, is to look for I would say you want to look for the height, what the final height of something's going to be, so that it isn't in, you know, so it's where it looks good and not in front of your windows.
There's Roxanne just asked about alfalfa pellets in the garden as a slow release fertilizer. I'm wondering whether this will attract critters. Alfalfa pellets are like rabbit food, right?
You know, I use alfalfa in my compost. I use the one thing I do not believe in buying things for compost. That's to me, I think that's not.
You mean those compost magic compost mixes?
No, I actually go to the feed store and buy alfalfa cubes. I think it's horse food.
Oh, right? I've seen this in your videos.
Yeah, and I buy alfalfa cubes, and especially in spring, because going into winter, my compost is mostly brown. I don't have a good mix there. So in early spring, I mix up, I throw a bunch of those alfalfa cubes, and I buy like a 50-pound bag, because that's the size bag they come in, and it lasts me like 5 years. I throw a bunch of those cubes in a 5-gallon bucket and soak them for a while so they loosen up a little bit, and then I sort of make some holes in my compost and throw in some of that like alfalfa mixture, because alfalfa is super high in nitrogen. So that's why an alfalfa thing would be probably good as an amendment for soil, because it's got a lot of nitrogen in it. And I always think that I'm going to have like deer coming from all over. I would assume deer would eat alfalfa. I mean, why wouldn't they? To my compost. And I never see signs that that has actually happened, that like the deer went nuts for it. But I would be a little worried. Although I have used an alfalfa compost tea. So it's, I'm always a little skeptical of those things, but it's like alfalfa basically that's in like a giant tea bag, and you soak it in a 5-gallon bucket or something. And then I use that to water, in particular, roses, like alfalfa. So there's that too.
Yeah, I also, as a nitrogen boost, and a probiotic for for compost. When I did run the Park Slope Food Co-op compost program, I would go to one of the police precinct horse stables and load my car up with stable bedding that had a bunch of manure in it.
Oh, that's the best stuff.
So you could go to your local farm and find, cow manure, chick manure, you know, goat manure. And that is a nitrogen kicker. And also the other, we'll just call them probiotics. There's a bunch of good stuff in manure for your compost. But the thing with that is either make sure your compost really heats up, or you age that compost, because, I mean, hot manure has a lot of nitrogen and that could nuke your stuff as well. James has been asking about ivy. And if can I paint my house to keep ivy off?
I don't think that'll help. I think you got to worry about, they got little suckers and they'll stick to anything. I think you got to worry about just, you know, trying to get rid of the ivy itself. So that would be digging it up to the extent you can. If you're of the ilk where you're okay using something like a glycosphate, am I saying that right? Roundup, AKA Roundup. You know, that's probably an application where you might need to do that. Also, you know, if you just keep on top of things and keep cutting it back and cutting it back and cutting it back, that can go a long way in terms of dealing with those sort of noxious weeds. But you let it go once and then you got an issue.
Scott said that the compost idea works great. You'll love it. You know, my idea about the ivy, if you can tolerate it visually, is to probably one of your neighbors is going to throw out some carpet dune, turn the carpet upside down and put it right on top of the ivy. It'll kill it. It'll take a while, but you're just depriving it of sunlight, and carpet is pretty weatherproof, you know, because like putting newspaper over it won't do anything. The newspaper will just disintegrate, but heavy old ply, you know, plywood, old OSB plywood, masonite, anything heavy and thick that keeps sunlight out will kill plants. And ivy, you know, you can kind of, I'm the ivy plant, help.
Yeah, the only problem with ivy and some of those other things is that when they have those runners that go underground, they tend to keep going out a little bit. What was the I've been dealing with like wild raspberry. I think we talked about this in the video once. I've been dealing with that, and I had an area for about 3 years completely covered up. And everything underneath it was dead. But what I saw was that there was little raspberry runners popping up, coming from outside of it back into that area very quickly. It's shocking how quickly that happened.
I kind of let parts of the yard go the last couple of years just because I've been so busy with work. And now I have wild raspberries everywhere. And this fall I went through and whacked them all down with the, I got a brush cutter attachment on my string trimmer. And then I noticed some of them I didn't get yet. So on the next clear day, I'm going to just go through and whack them. And I think for the next couple of years, I'm just going to, I think I have a beater lawnmower. I think I'm going to put it on the highest setting and just mow the brushy areas down a couple times a year and beat it back.
Oh, I'm understanding James' question now. So he has ivy growing on a trellis and he wants it there. He's trying to figure out if there was a way he could keep it from also sticking to the house. And I don't, and my answer is no. I don't think so.
Maybe you could switch to an annual on your trellis.
Mm-hmm.
Or is clematis? Clematis will grow up and then die back.
Yeah, and I say clematis, you say clematis. Either one is right. But that doesn't have any kind of suckers, so that will only, you kind of actually have to train that on a trellis. So, so you would never have to worry about that getting invasive at all in any case.
Rick, I like your little comments throughout the stream here. Small Garden Musings says, I'm fighting mock strawberries coming from my neighbor's yard.
It's always the neighbors, isn't it?
You know, in New York City, my house is 20 feet wide. And so my neighbors are very close. And you kind of reach a balance of what you will put up with from your neighbor and what your neighbor will put up with from you. So I'm very lucky that my neighbors on both sides are very nice. But sometimes you'll get a, if you live next to a building that's just rentals and it's an absentee landlord, it could be a problem. So
yeah. Yeah, I have, Jennifer says that Yulia has a climbing hydrangea. Yeah, I have two of them too. I grow one on my, Yulia's is beautiful. It grows up her house. It's unbelievable. I have one on my garage too. And those are, they are stunning plants. A lot of people are afraid of those because those do have suckers. But you can peel them back. And there will be little, like if you had to, like if I ever had to like paint that part of my garage, I could peel it off. And I'd probably have to do a little bit of light sanding because there would be a little bit of those little aerial rootlets stuck in there. And then paint it, and then you can kind of stand it back up again. It's nothing that's ever going to like ruin the, it's never going to ruin your house. But it is, I mean, you don't put a climbing hydrangea on a 6 foot trellis and think it's going to be good to go because it's going to, well, the one climbing hydrangea we have grows on the oak tree that we had to cut halfway down. We left it standing as like, it looks like a totem pole now because it was a dead tree. But that climbing hydrangea is 30 feet easy and still going. So.
And Yulia has a video on climbing.
Yeah, it's, yeah, and you will see hers, and it's gorgeous.
Oh, and I love Daisy. I'm a bad neighbor. I planted ostrich ferns that have been going everywhere. We have ostrich ferns here. I thought that they were native to New England. We have winter ferns, ostrich ferns, and then it's called a hay meadow fern. Is the other one's called a meadow fern? But, I mean, they grow like rabbits, and I don't mind it because it's just a nice cover. I mean, they're in the woods, they're in my yard, and I'm like, okay, it's a fern. Is that a bad thing?
Yeah, our whole woods right here is full of them. And they do run a bit, but, you know, when they pop up in our grass, we just mow over them. I would never, I mean, they are native to North America. I would never think of them as something noxious in any case. I do think it's funny though, because I once saw them listed on a list of native ground flower ground covers, and I'm like, well, I guess they are a ground cover. I never certainly thought of like a 7 foot tall plant as a ground cover, but yeah.
My patron Kent just said that they grow sunflowers professionally. I did not.
Oh, there you go. See, cool.
Wow. Will has said that you can eat ferns. They're called fiddlehead ferns in the spring.
Yeah, I made them last year.
Are they those ostrich like ferns? That is that considered a fiddlehead fern?
Yeah. Ostrich ferns, I believe, are the ones that you get the fiddleheads from.
All right.
And we made them last year. Tastes a lot like asparagus to me. I don't really like asparagus, so that wasn't a great mix for me. But we did it. Yeah, they taste. They're quite. I mean, I didn't really know exactly how to cook them. I was sort of experimenting, and I know that they serve them in great restaurants, so they probably have a better idea of how to cook them than I do. But we did it for the first time last year. I'm like, this is ridiculous, because I know that people pay good money for fiddleheads. Why am I not cooking some of the like 40,000 of them that are in my yard?
I don't really like the taste, so.
You have tried them, huh?
Yeah.
I know this is not my. I mean, I put enough butter and garlic on it, and salt and pepper and olive oil and butter are probably pretty good.
Jeez. Ken has garlic under leaves and plywood. When should he remove it? Remove the top of it. I would not put garlic under plywood. I would just use the leaves. But is that a thing? I would take it off before your last frost, because my garlic will start to pierce through the soil before the frost is done. It gets a little burnt, you know, the tip gets burnt and it the little top of it dies off, but it'll keep going. Don't worry about it. So is that a thing, plywood on garlic? I've never
heard that in there, but yeah.
I don't know.
But the leaves, I mean, get the plywood off, leave the leaves on, and then it'll grow. Did you say this? It'll just pop up right through that. And then you can kind of pull the mulch away if you need to in spring.
Ruth wants to get rid of deep divots in the lawn from chipmunks and groundhogs. I would get a dog.
That's what Rick said too, I think.
I have an invisible fence wire. I got the DIY kit, which I'm making a video about actually, because I just upgraded the thing. Pet Safe is the brand. And you have to leash train your dog. I think you should have two dogs because they're better that way. Oh, we haven't had the dog appearance yet. But other than that, the problem is that they're going after the grubs in your lawn. And if you use that milky spore over like 3, 4, 5 years, that can help get rid of it. But the problem is if your neighbors have grubs as well, they're just going to, it's kind of like the wild raspberry bushes and that they're just going to run back into your yard. So, oh, and Andrea's here. Andrea and her husband, are longtime fans of Garden Fork, and I have my done is better than perfect sign they made me. It's down in the shop right now. It's hanging in a. I sent you a picture, didn't I, Andrea? I put it on. I think I put it on Instagram. Even listen to me, like I'm some big Instagrammer.
So Roxanne asked about frosted explosion grass, and I had to Google it. Now that I Googled it, I know what you're talking about. It's Panicum elegans, and it's this really sort of ethereal seed head on it. And when I first Googled it, Roxanne, it popped up in all the like cut flower people. So it's apparently excellent as a cut flower. So basically, I'm just looking at because I've not personally grown it. I'm just looking at a extension website right now who says that there is some reseeding with it, but nothing. They've never had an issue problem with that. So I don't think you're going to regret growing that one.
Andrea also asked about starting an orchard in Virginia. Fedco Seeds has a great bookstore. Part of their catalog is books, and a big part of that book catalog is growing orchard stuff. They have a bunch of cold tolerant orchard varieties. So Virginia, you're even better because it isn't very cold down there. But they have a whole bunch of books about stewarding the land and how to start an orchard. My big takeaway from orchards is that the leaf litter from the trees has to be picked up at the end of the year, because a lot of the diseases stay in the leaves. And then when you get new growth, the disease from the dead leaves gets back up on the tree. And that's my problem here. I had four. Now I have three beautiful apple trees, and there is a blight mold fungus. The orchard guy told me what it was, but because I don't rake up the leaves, because they're in these shrubby areas of the yard, every year my trees get reinfected. So you have to have grass around. Actually, Will from the Weekend Homestead has started an orchard. He's up in northern Wisconsin, but it's beautiful. I'll have to share some pictures. If you go to the Weekend Homestead YouTube channel, he has some videos about the orchard. It looks like a fortress.
So, hey, Rich wanted to know when the best time to split tall grass roots to double the quantity near his deck. Most grass is best to do in spring. Once it's started putting on a little bit of growth, is a really good time to go after grasses. So you wait till you see a little bit happening with it, and then you can dig it up and divide it and replant. Care Bear wants to know how we met, Eric.
Oh, we met in an airport. And when I first met Erin, she wouldn't talk to me.
What? What are you talking about?
We both flew to Austin. I think it was Austin for a Troy Built ambassador program, brand ambassador. And we both got in the same van. It was not a big van, but you know, one of those airport vans that picked up me and you and one of the other influencers. And you said you were from Wisconsin, and I started talking to you a whole lot, and you were kind of yes, no, yeah, no, yeah, no.
That's not true. This is a lie. I have no recollection of this whatsoever.
That's how we met. I remember it.
Well, I remember meeting you in Austin, but I do not remember any of this van story. I think you're lying.
I'm not.
Maybe I felt like I was going to puke in the van. Wasn't able to have a conversation because I thought I was going to puke.
Oh, that might have been. I didn't realize that you weren't feeling well.
So. I don't know if I was or not, but I mean, I'm not really known for not talking, so it seems odd to me that would have been the case.
I distinctly remember it, but then you warmed up when you realized that, you know.
You were going to be my drinking buddy?
Yeah, Eric, one glass of wine, Eric.
That you were going to be the one I was going to be able to drag to the bar with me with those things?
I was your buffer. But then, I mean, I don't know, we just got along really well. So I was born on the East Coast. My family are New Yorkers. I mean, and when we moved to the Midwest, we still had a New York accent, you know? And that kind of made fun of us. So, but then I grew up, you know, learning how to hunt and fish and camping and cutting down trees. And I became a Midwesterner. And so I think we kind of have those similar values of kind of, you know, just stop complaining and get it done kind of thing.
Yulia's totally calling me out here. She says I went quickly from that was a lie to I don't recollect.
Oh, and Will said Will and I did a podcast about apple tree best practices. It was about 3 months ago. So you can, I don't know if any of you are watching that don't know, we have a podcast as well. It's on the podcast app. It's on Google and our Arduino. Anyway, it's everywhere. Just type in Garden Fork Radio and it'll be there. So we have a few minutes left here. Would you guys like to see the puppies?
Everyone wants to see the puppies.
Oh, I have a video I can share that we did this morning. We were in my neighbor's yard playing with their dogs. Let me bring that up, okay? Let's see here. I'm going to hit this software. It's called StreamYard. It's really quite good. So I'm going to share this. And there's no audio. But
There is audio. I can hear those, the squeaky toy going. Oh my God, they're gonna be tired. The question is, which dog is Eric gonna come back with? Yeah, Danica, unfortunately, unlike Eric, I won't be able to just pick Odin up and plop him on my lap and put him in front of the screen. Who is it? Oh, it's Spike. She looks so just not amused with you.
You're asleep because I just woke her up.
She looks like you just woke her up.
But they were playing for like an hour in my neighbor's yard. So, and they're quite heavy. Hello. She's wagging her tail.
So, well, that's good.
And I'll go get Andy, all right?
Okay.
Andy.
They're so cute.
Andy, come.
Okay, James, I'm looking at your question right now. Southwest doesn't get sun. Yeah, James, you know, my concern is, I think you nailed it already. I think it's the sun thing. You know, roses are one of those plants that it's hard to, you know, I'm surprised that the Southwest is not giving you enough sun, but you must have some trees or something. I mean, I would personally, I think I'd give up on them there. Sorry, move them somewhere else or just get something else. Okay, here's
Andy.
Oh my gosh, look at her. They both look dead tired. And
Andy's great. She's really smart. And she greets everything paws first. So she comes running at you, and these paws are like, they're about 3 feet ahead of her face. You know, they're like, hi.
That's cute. That's very cute. Will, it's like a navy blue wall, more or less, behind me.
All right, let me put my ears back in so I can hear what's going on. How is the audio quality and the video quality, everybody?
Yeah, that's a good question. It seems pretty good on my end, but. Eric, here's the question I want to know. So we went through, at first, when you were getting Spike, so you got Andy and then you're getting Spike. I remember we had a conversation about, is it a good idea to get essentially two puppies at the same time? And you said, yeah, it's great. And then a few months later, you're like, well, maybe not. So where are you now? Are you happy you've got two puppies at the same time? Not that you can do anything about it, but.
Well, there are pluses and minuses. First, when we got the puppies, it was during the pandemic. And so I call the pandemic a dumpster fire. I don't want to go into, I mean, everyone knows what we're doing, we're going through. So bringing first one puppy with a 14-year-old geriatric Labrador, it was okay. Andy pretty much got it. And then 2 months later, we got Spiker, and it was something to look forward to. But once we got them together, it just was puppy pandemonium. And add to that the just trying to limit our socialization, and people couldn't come over, and you know, it just became in a gestalt way, not more stressful. The camera operator is working from home at Zoom calls 14 hours a day, trying to turn an entity 180 degrees around. So I was thinking this isn't a good idea, but now they've kind of mellowed out. There's a routine. Actually, when we start eating dinner, we don't feed them people food. So they go upstairs and go to bed. So it's like, oh, the kids are in bed, you know, we can, you know. But if we watch TV, they come down and sit on the couch. The one drawback I see, and this is maybe a lack of training on my part because I just need to even train my own self, but they, if they are playing together, they will not listen to you. And I think that's just my fault. And if they're running up the trail together, they're a pack. So they're not as good at listening. And our previous dogs, we got Henry first, and then we got Charlie Pup when Henry was 2 years old. So I had 2 years to train the one dog. Then the second dog was a puppy, and I could focus my energy on the puppy and train her. But in the end, they didn't listen very well either anyway. So,
yeah.
Anyway, and we could talk about training methods, you know, the e-collars and the click training and the, I mean, there's uses for all of them, I think. But yeah, so, oh, Care Bear, same puppy. Oh, new puppy in June. Everybody wanted to come over. Sorry, no, that was hard. Yeah. So I think it's really important to have two dogs. And, but Aaron, your way, which also makes sense, is to stagger them every couple of years.
Yeah, that would be, I mean, ideally, if everything works out, you know, if everybody lives to what a general dog life expectancy, that works out fine. But so right now our dogs are 3 years apart. Our first dogs were 18 months apart. That was not great planning. We lost two dogs and a cat over the course of like a year and a half or something.
Yeah.
That was just a lot. That was not pleasant for anybody. It's bad enough, but that was tough. So our dogs are 3 years apart now, but what we found now is that now we're on that cycle. So the older dogs, I really believe that the older dogs teach the younger dogs at least basic stuff. Like there's stuff that we never taught our younger dog that she just knows we don't do. So I swear that they learn that from the older dog. And I do think it helps with the training. For me, I feel like that helps with the training because you always have one dog who's a little bit of an example for the other one. And so now the problem is, of course, if your older dog who's supposed to be the training dog has some bad habits because they pass those on too. So
our problem is Andy's kind of a jumper and she won't jump on me anymore because I've trained her not to. But I thought that training would extend to everyone and it doesn't. So like our neighbors, she's like paws first, she runs and she isn't quite like, she's not thumping their chest or anything, but it's still, I can see it. I've seen it in other dogs too. And we're working on trying to curb that, but that's a tough one.
That's way our oldest dog. For anyone who doesn't know, I have Newfoundlands. So it's a pretty big deal when they decide to jump on somebody. But Odin, who's now six, he did that until he was about four. And, you know, he's 140 pounds at that point. And, you know, I mean, we'd see a neighbor coming, like this one neighbor who always brings them treats. So they love her so much. He would get super excited. And I'm like, oh my God, he's going to jump on her. So that's like running, screaming, stop, you know? So that's bad. It's one of those things that, you know, with every dog we have, I always learn something that I'm like, oop, should have trained that differently or should have nipped that habit in the bud immediately. You know, so you learn those things. I think I figure, you know, by the time I get, you know, to be ancient and on my like 20th dog, maybe I'll have it down.
All right. So we've been yakking for an hour.
That was fun. Thank you for inviting me. Yeah. Appreciate it. That was super fun.
Don't forget, go find Aaron on Instagram. And she's on Facebook as well and her YouTube channel. But it's just I watch you on Instagram mainly and on YouTube. But the Instagram is just photo after photo of amazing stuff. And I, you know, I'm glad we're friends despite you not talking to me when we first met.
So. This is, you guys do not believe this. This is some sort of false narrative that Eric has built up in his head. This is not a thing. I don't believe it for a second. I don't believe it for a second.
Well, that was kind of pre-cell phone video, so I can't prove it. So.
Oh, thank God. Thank God. Anyway, I feel like we hit it off fairly quickly there, because I do know that Eric and I went to the bar at least once during that trip together, so it must have worked out okay. So this was a influencer trip to I hate that word. We're not going to use that word. This was a trip. We were both working for Troy Belt. And I think that was our first. Were you new with Troy Belt that year?
No, that was my second year.
I think that was my first year with Troy Belt, was the right. Austin one. Yeah, okay. So I was coming in, and some of these people knew people and whatever. So anyway, it was all overwhelming. But see, I think Eric's just making this up, because being like, what really happened is we met each other. We gave each other the Wisconsin secret handshake. We said, go Packers and F the Bears. And then we became great friends.
I love the Packers.
Yes, we know. You're required to.
All right. So we're going to do this again, and we're going to, maybe we'll do it from Aaron's YouTube channel. And then
yeah, we can do that.
There'll be lots of people asking plant questions with names we don't know.
Right. Thank you, everybody, for the feedback on the audio, because I'm hearing a little bit of echo on my end, too. So if you're hearing an echo sometimes, it's probably related to that. But thanks for everybody for helping us kind of work through this new software. I think it worked pretty well. So this is awesome.
And thanks, Will, from the Weekend Homestead, because he's behind the scenes here feeding us comments and stuff. And he's also having lunch while he's doing it. We get to watch that just below here.
Nice. Nice.
All right, everyone.
All right. Bye, everybody.
All right. What do you think? I enjoyed that. I want to do the live stream thing more. I think I kind of like the spontaneity of it. And the software that's out there that's available now, Aaron and I were playing with it, and it's pretty cool. We're going to try a dual live stream in the future. And Will from the Weekend Homestead's going to come on, and all the other cast and crew of Garden Fork will be there. So, again, thanks for listening. Go out and do cool things and make it a great day. I'll see you. Garden Fork Radio is produced by Garden Fork Media LLC in Brooklyn, New York. The music used in our show is licensed from uniquetracks.com and audioblocks.com. The executive producer of Garden Fork Radio is Jimmy Gutz. You can learn more about Jimmy and the custom hollow books he makes at hollowbooks.com. All right, we'll try that again. I'm going to move the microphone closer and push it down a little bit like that. 3, 2, 1.